This is Colorado Matters from KCFR News. I'm Ryan Warner. Margaret Newman teaches Buddhist meditation to prisoners. She's director of the Ratna Prison Initiative based in Boulder. 2 years ago, she got an unexpected email. It wasn't from a jail cell, but from a battlefield. It came from Sergeant Paul Kendall, stationed in Iraq, who thought Buddhism might have some answers. And here's part of what it said. I am having problems dealing with the mindsets of most of my fellow soldiers. Many crave violence and wish for opportunities to shoot someone. I just want to return home to my wife and 2 young sons in one piece. With that, Margaret began advising Sergeant Kendall on how to find peace in a war zone. He's now writing a book based on their many letters back and forth. Margaret joined me in the studio. Sergeant Kendall, now back from the Middle East, spoke to me from Jacksonville, Florida, where he lives. He told me about his first few weeks in Iraq.
The main objective and the goal, of course, was to assist the Iraqi people and do something good for the people and the country itself, of course. But, you know, it didn't take very long. The deaths of friends, 8 friends in 6 days. Things change when your friends start dying. And when that happened, you know, their mindsets were, I'm going to go home in one piece, and I don't care how many Iraqis have to die to make sure that happens. They're going to shoot at cars. They're going to do whatever they have to do to survive. And I guess that type of mindset started to really bother me after a while.
Margaret, let's bring you into the conversation. How did you react when you got that first letter from Sergeant Kendall?
It came to me through Shambhala International, and I was immediately touched by the fact that there was a soldier over there who was awake and possessed a sense of integrity. Not that I'm critical of the other soldiers. I'm not. I feel like we put them in terrible situations and hold them to the standards of civilized society. So I have a lot of compassion for them, and so does Sergeant Kendall. But I could see that he was very much alone in his world, and I was very happy to begin a correspondence with him.
This is the Shambhala Center, of course, in Colorado.
Yes.
And so just early on, when you read about the kind of turmoil that he was going through, what tools did you want to give him to help him get through it?
Well, first of all, I had a lot of trepidation about my qualifications to give a soldier in combat advice. Obviously, I'd never been in combat. But what I did have to draw on was 12 years of experience of working with prisoners. The ones that come to me wanting to learn to meditate and restore their souls have a very similar situation, which is that if they want to set themselves apart from the stark harshness of their environment, the only way to do that is expose themselves to the ridicule of their peers, because compassion is seen as weakness in the military and in prison. So I felt like any help I can give him in any kind of meditation practice which would allow him the kind of spaciousness he needed to not be swept along by the storm that he was in. There were also a lot of teachings about how to access our innate wisdom and compassion. I didn't presume to give him meditation instruction per se, formal meditation instruction, because I didn't know what his situation was, and I was pretty sure he couldn't sit under a tree somewhere.
In fact, Sergeant, you wrote early on to Margaret, meditation is difficult here. I live in a tent with 20 other soldiers. We have to walk with someone wherever we go. The only quiet time is in the shower or a hot, sweltering porta potty, and neither is terribly conducive to meditation practice. So is meditation possible in a war zone?
I did a little bit riding around in the Humvee at night, because then it was tranquil. And you looking up at the moon and the stars, and it was peaceful at certain times.
And Margaret said the other piece of her advice was that you would have to open yourself up to ridicule. Did you face pressure from other soldiers because your views differed from theirs?
A lot. And the one thing in Iraq, if you showed compassion, like Margaret mentioned, you wouldn't be trusted. And there were many times I had to mask my compassion towards those around me and feign aggression and anger just to make sure the people around me, you know, would trust me. In one situation, that one email to Margaret, we were driving down the road in the Humvee, and I was the gunner standing up in the hatch, and there was a car just parked off the side of the road. And in Iraq, sometimes you fire like a warning shot to make sure the car gets over. But in this case, I saw the car, I didn't see it as a threat, and right off to the side of the road, right by the car, were three young little kids playing in the front yard. And I knew if I fired at the car, a ricochet might hit and kill or wound one of the innocent kids, so I didn't fire. But as soon as we passed the car, a squad leader from down below started to berate me and yell at me, and I said, well, I didn't want to risk taking the shot because of the innocent kids. And he said, I don't care about any effing kids. You effing shoot next time. And my last thought, looking at the kids as we drove away, was like, great, you know. Even though I didn't personally see a threat there, if I didn't feign aggression, they'd fire me, or they'd put me in some other job, and they wouldn't trust me anymore.
And, Margaret, how did you help him through that? I mean, in an environment where lives are at stake, how one behaves is pretty important.
Exactly. He was in a very intense, wrathful situation with emotions bouncing off of the walls all around him. So the question is how to be with your mind in that kind of situation.
When you say be with your mind, I mean have some state of calm. Is that what you're saying?
Well, sometimes if your mind isn't calm, if your mind is frantic, then being with your mind is being with the frantic, being with the feeling of frantic.
Yeah.
The teachings that I tended to provide Sergeant Kendall with were teachings that told you how to be with your mind regardless of what state of mind it is. And he was very able to do that. Because of the intensity of the situation he was in, he got it right away.
Sergeant, in the manuscript for your book, you tell another story about pointing a gun at a little boy who is annoying you. Tell me
you
why
you had to go and mention that story, didn't you?
Well, you mentioned in the book, I guess.
That's not a very compassionate part of the whole compassion thing.
Well, yeah. Tell me about what happened.
I don't know. The heat, maybe. I don't know. It was during the elections. I think it was in October 2005, and they weren't allowing any traffic on the roads. And we set up a checkpoint just to make sure there were any cars driving around because, you know, suicide bombers driving into the voting booths and so forth. And, you know, the local kids were coming down to the river to get water, and they'd hang out and talk to us. And, you know, we'd give them candy and stuff. But the little boys would always, you know, the stronger and bigger would always jump in and grab the candy and leave their little sisters out, and they would never get the candy. And I don't know, it was just one of those days, and this one little kid kept jumping in front of me and jumping in front of me, and he'd already, like, stolen the candy from his sister or whatever. I was trying to get the candy to her. And I don't know, for whatever, I didn't expect him to react this way, but I lifted my weapon and my M16 with a grenade launcher on it and kind of pointed at him, thinking he would just kind of like go away. But I guess he really thought I was going to shoot him because he just froze and stared right at me. And all of a sudden, snot started pouring out of his nose and he just froze. And I was like, oh my God, he thought I was actually going to shoot him. And the kid started to walk away, dropped his water bucket and everything, kept looking back behind him, expecting me to shoot him in the back or something. You know, I regret doing that, of course, because he must have obviously that traumatized him greatly.
I'm no expert on Buddhism, but the notion of karma comes to mind. Did you have discussions about karma when there would be instances like we just heard, Morgan?
Yes, Paul. Sergeant Kendall had a situation where his unit was being fired on, and he was bitterly chastising himself because he actually tried to shoot someone that he felt, in looking back on it, was not an immediate threat to him. And so he was very concerned about the karma of the situation. He missed, by the way, and he was glad of that. So I consulted with a colleague of mine. I wanted to make sure that my answer to him was appropriate and helpful. So I consulted with a colleague who's who worked with me at Rotten Prison Initiative and is a fully ordained Buddhist monk. And so he explained that one of the ingredients necessary for a karmic act to be completed is that you're happy with the result, and that in Sergeant Kendall's case, he felt a lot of regret and remorse, so that kind of undermines the solidity of the formation of the habit of aggression.
If it doesn't end with satisfaction,
it's a weekend.
And it ends with regret. Interesting.
Yeah.
And Sergeant, how did you deal with karma? I mean, were you conscious of that based on your behavior?
I was, and, you know, I saw it in action on a regular basis and in many occasions, and we did this air assault on this power plant along the Euphrates River, and I almost got killed three times before lunch, and I reflected back on all those near-death experiences within about a three-hour period, and I was just thinking, that's what I get for making that kid, you know, snot come out of his nose and everything, or some other actions and such as that, things that I had done before. And it just, you know, there are certain things that you can feel that, you know, if you do something negative, you know, that's going to come back to haunt you later.
And you take some actions that you think will restore things or set right the situation. Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, that's one chapter in the book called Something as Simple as Tea and Bread, where, you know, there were some Iraqi families, Shia and Sunni. They're basically just squatters that, you know, that had been displaced after the war. And they survived off having their children come and sell us Cokes and candy. And, well, I would, you know, go over to these homes and I'd invite myself in and you know, they would invite me in, or most of the time I would just basically invite myself in, but they were very kind and accommodating, and they'd fix me tea, and we'd have bread, and I'd socialize and get to know them. Part of the making up for some of the negative karma was to help some of these families out. And in one case, this one family had a young, maybe five-year-old girl, and they didn't have any toys. And when I was leaving, the mother asked, you know, do you have any toys? And the father asked for some water, because there's no bottled water. And I said, okay. And I came back the next day with a whole bunch of cases of bottled water, a big box of toys and school supplies, and a Barbie doll for the little girl. And the smile on her face and the smile on the family's, you know, faces provided with these necessities, that certainly helped make up for some of the negative karma that I'd accrued.
You're listening to Colorado Matters, and we're speaking today with Sergeant Paul Kendall about his experiences in Iraq. And also with us is Margaret Newman, who was his spiritual advisor while he was at war. Paul has recently written a book based on their letters back and forth. And, Sergeant, I'm imagining there are some people listening to this interview who say, this is all very nice, but this man was in a war zone, and a soldier is someone who is trained to perceive an enemy a certain way. Isn't this guy a softy? And isn't this guy someone who, if he views the Iraqis this way, puts his own men and women in danger? How do you respond to that?
Well, as I said, based on what I've written in my book or explained, I certainly put my life on the line. The main point of the book and of course, the Shambhala teachings and what Margaret has talked about is controlling one's anger and aggression. And you can certainly go to war and you can defend freedom and democracy and do all of those good things for God and country, but it's the internal reactions to events that will haunt you for the rest of your life. You know, we always hear about Vietnam veterans and what they, you know, some of the atrocities and things they may have committed or just simply seen. Well, you know, those same type of things go on in Iraq. But it's how you react to certain situations. And, I mean, I lost 8 friends in 6 days. Both Humvees were blown up. They were all blown to thousands of unrecognizable pieces. I dealt with it simply as a fact of war. But in some of the cases of my other friends, their reaction to it, they wanted revenge. They suddenly lumped all the Iraqis together as being complicit in the deaths of our friends.
Margaret, how long did you correspond by email? How long was it?
The 10 months that he was there, we corresponded regularly back and forth.
Dozens of emails, it's safe to say.
About.
Yeah. And when did you first meet Paul in person?
Well, Paul's home was in Jacksonville, Florida, and my husband and I have a rental property, a vacation rental property on the ocean in New Smyrna Beach, which is about an hour and a half from Jacksonville. And I happened to be staying there when he came home from Iraq. He was so raw. He was just so raw and so exhausted and so tired. He had come home a couple weeks early because his mother was diagnosed with cancer, and she actually was on life support before he got to California. And, you know, as soon as I wrote him, I've raised 3 children. All of my motherly instincts went on full red alert.
Your maternal and your Buddhist instincts continue. And Sergeant, you're dealing with not only the illness of your mother at the time, but troubles with your wife as well. And in that context, what did it mean to have Margaret there?
It was very, very important. Yeah, the troubles you speak of is, I had trouble with the man she was sleeping with while I was in Iraq. I guess that's a big trouble. But I didn't discover that. I guess I should have known, but as they always say, you're in those situations, the guy or whatever is always the last one to know. What really kept me going was basically Margaret's support.
Well, what are you up to now, Paul?
I'm still in the Georgia National Guard. We just returned from a training mission in Great Britain. We went there for 2 weeks for our annual train to train with the British Army. I teach as an adjunct history professor in Jacksonville. And then I teach, ironically, you know, Margaret spent this last 12 years, you know, teaching Buddhism to prisoners. Well, I got hired last month to teach kids at a correctional facility.
Oh, my,
so,
my.
You know, so she's, so oddly here, she's, you know, does work in a prison, and here I am working in a prison trying to prevent the kids that I work with from graduating up to her level.
You're still with the unit, so is there any chance that you'd be redeployed?
It looks like that will probably happen. They're talking about Afghanistan, so, you know, I hear winters in Afghanistan are nice. And at least, you know, I did Saudi Arabia, I did Iraq, so I might as well throw Afghanistan into the mix, you know, the whole trilogy thing, and,
Margaret, there was some...
we'll see what happens.
There was some surprise to hear that he might be deployed again.
Yeah, because I keep asking him, and he keeps assuring me that it won't happen.
I did not say that.
Are you prepared
no,
for that?
No, Mom, I'm not going.
And are you prepared to do this again if he goes
Absolutely.
To...
Absolutely. Yes, of course.
Well, Sergeant, Margaret, thanks very much for sharing this story with us.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Sergeant Paul Kendall joined us from WJCT Public Radio in Jacksonville, Florida. He's written a yet-to-be-published book based on his spiritual journey in Iraq. Margaret Newman is executive director of the Ratna Foundation in Boulder. We heard about this story through our Public Insight Network. It's how listeners help KCFR cover the news, and we'd like you to join. Log on to kcfr.org and click on Public Insight.